Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going this week as usual. Trump is out there giving those task force briefings, and I think he's going to curtail that a little bit. He messed up maybe a little bit on these disinfectants and things. They misconstrued purposely what he had said always. That's what the media is good at. We're going to start off with Navarro, and he's outside the White House being interviewed, and he's going to give us some ideas about the distrust of China that's building up within Americans' minds. So here we go with Navarro.
Are some of these states, particularly Georgia, where they still have a high number of cases, moving too soon? Let's raise that right now with Peter Navarro, of course, the White House Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy Director. Peter, good to have you.
Good morning, Neil.
What do you think of Georgia's moves? The president, who's open to states getting back to business, was concerned that Georgia was moving a little ahead of its skis. Do you agree with that?
And Neil, I like to stay in my lane, and Vice President Pence is doing a great job on the task force setting out the guidelines. I'll let them speak to that. But the one value add I might have to this is to talk with the American people now about the calculus. We know for a fact that the virus kills directly. We know for a fact that shutting down our economy has destroyed jobs, it's cost enormous stock market wealth loss, which goes into pension funds. We know that it's doing tremendous economic damage. But the more subtle problem, which is a serious problem that comes into the calculus, Neil, is the fact that economic disruptions kill as well. We learned that when China wiped out a lot of their factories in the Midwest. We saw a dramatic rise in suicide rates, death to opioids, death to alcoholism, death to comorbidity increases in things like diabetes. We also saw a sharp blow from the China shock then to the family structure. We saw more divorces. We saw more children in poverty. So when the president has been grappling with this whole issue of when to get the economy back, it's a decision that no president should have to make. It's probably the toughest decision any president has to make. But the people themselves, boots on the ground now, are understanding this tension between the death and destruction that the China virus can cause directly and the death and destruction the China virus can cause indirectly by shutting down our economy. So that's the big picture here, Neil, and we're struggling with that, but we're learning as a people how to fight this virus. This is a war. It's a war that China started by spawning the virus, by hiding the virus, by hoarding personal protective equipment during the time it hid the virus. And now it's ironic and, in my view, disgusting that they're profiteering from that. So this is that's the big picture.
Well, let me ask you about the China part of that, Peter. Could I ask you about the China
Sure.
part of that? Because you have long been very critical of China, even in the trade talks. They had to verify everything they did and were promising. I'm just wondering now, they made a lot of commitments to the administration and to the American people about buying a lot more goods from us. But seeing as they misrepresented the seriousness of the coronavirus in their country and might have had some help and assistance in that regard, do you trust them to make good on trade promises they made to you and to us?
Neil, one of the most important documents that got issued this year is the recent Pew Research poll. It's amazing poll. It shows that over 90% of Americans now believe that China's a threat. Over 70% of Americans across party lines have an unfavorable view of China. They are concerned about jobs, the trade deficit, the environment, human rights, and the military. So if you ask me, the author of Death by China and the Coming China Wars, whether I trust China, I would simply say the American people no longer trust China. And there's something I think the Chinese...
So are they going to make good, Peter? Are they going to make good on the promises
trade deal?
They
well,
made
well, certainly,
to you and the American people? Do you worry right, about that?
Let's look at the promises they made. They've agreed to buy a tremendous amount of our agricultural products. It's curious that they're now buying a lot of Brazilian soybeans. We're watching that carefully. They also promised to stop all this intellectual property theft and counterfeiting, but we're being inundated now with counterfeit tests for antibodies and other things. And it's so. Do I trust the Chinese? No. Let me give you the something that China would call the four kills. I think it's worth going over because the Chinese effectively declared war. They spawned that virus. The most likely explanation is it came out of a biological weapons lab, probably by accident, but who knows. But more importantly, we know they knowingly hid that virus, Neil, for 6 weeks. That's the second kill, because during that time, hundreds of thousands of Wuhanians and other Chinese flew to places like New York and Detroit and all around, and Milan, all around the world, effectively seeding the planet with this Wuhan virus. And it just, if they had simply been honest with the world, they could have contained it within Wuhan and we wouldn't be having this conversation. That's the second kill. The third kill, and the China's own customs data, Neil, show this. We saw while they were hiding the virus from the world, they went out and vacuumed up all the PPE around the world. 2 billion masks they bought alone, and they took it from countries in Europe, South America, the United States. And so when the people, the nurses, the brave nurses and doctors on the front lines in New York or Chicago or Detroit or New Orleans needed PPE, part of the reason they didn't have it is because of that third kill. The Chinese had basically vacuumed that up. And now the fourth kill is that they're hoarding that and using that PPE as a weapon in their soft power to project it and to profiteer. I mean, we're seeing, even Neil, these are 30, 40-cent masks, 50-cent masks at retail usually, and they're selling them. They're coming to the hospitals here for $7 and $8. And so,
well, it seems proof that they lied. They lied there with those four pillars you mentioned. They lied four times. Now, I'm just wondering that back in January and February, when you were apparently sending out signals and alarm in this memo that went to the National Security Council and worried about this approaching virus and a potential pandemic, that people didn't appreciate the magnitude of that, because even then you seemed to be sensing that the Chinese might be hiding something. Did that ever reach the level of the president?
Indeed it did. And as I was writing that memo to the task force on the travel ban, President Donald J. Trump had already made the decision to do that. And that was one of the most courageous decisions we've ever seen a president make. He took tremendous heat from that, from all sorts of
special interest groups. But he was always convinced that the Chinese were trying to deal with the crisis and that Xi Jinping was being very transparent.
I don't think that's fair to say
that
always.
That wasn't entirely the case, right?
Well, there's a difference between public pronouncements and what you actually know and prepare for. And I can assure you that the president...
So he had his doubts.
He had his doubts,
there's
right? There's no question. Okay. He's one of the smartest guys in the world. He knows there's an issue. There's trust issues with the Chinese. Neil, the thing that bothered me, being a China watcher for many years, is the fact that they came here, shook our hands, broke bread, got near the president on January 14th and 15th. Now, they knew over a month before that we had a pandemic on our hands. You know, the other thing they did, Neil, and this is this whole debate about the World Health Organization, trusted brand prior to this crisis. Now what people know is that China gained control of that agency through a proxy, this guy Tedros. It's from Ethiopia, which is a client state of China. And basically, China was able to hide behind the World Health Organization shield while it sequentially went through these four kills. And, you know, this is a serious point in our history, Neil. What we have to do first and foremost is to deal with this public health crisis, win this war. And one of the things that I'm doing about 40 yards across the street in my office every day is working with a great team on mobilizing our industrial base and supply chain. President Trump's orchestrating the most rapid industrial mobilization that we've had since World War II. If you look at the ventilator issue, which was like the right issue du jour over a month ago, and people like Governor Cuomo were wringing their hands and running around with their hair on fire, at this point in time, we are going to have more ventilators than we need, and we're going to have plenty to help our friends around the world. General Motors, to its credit, took 17 days to stand up a factory and turn out its first ventilator. And we were able to deliver those ventilators off the assembly line to hospitals in Gary and Chicago within 3 days. So I'm seeing that.
Now, there's no doubt marshaling those companies to do this was very impressive. But, Peter, I did want to get a sense from you now where we're going. And you talk in the beginning about balancing our economic needs with our health needs. The president did hint that there might be distancing provisions still in effect into the early summer. Isn't that almost inevitably going to mean that the V-shaped recovery he hopes for, a lot of people seem to think is still possible, like Tim Cook of Apple, that's harder to do. As people come back, they can't crowd into as many restaurants and certainly as many theaters. It'll be a different environment. It might be a slow go, not at all a V-shape.
You began that discussion by saying I had talked about balancing your health and economic needs, but that wasn't my point at the beginning. My point is that there's health concerns whether you open the economy or not. In other words, the virus kills directly, but it also kills indirectly when we destroy our economy. Suicides, drug overdoses, all of that. So that's what we're grappling with. And as I said at the outset here, the Vice President, Mike Pence, one of the greatest vice presidents we've had, he's doing a fine job navigating these shoals where it's a learning experience for all of us. But I think that the American people are learning how to social distance, learning how to be responsible in terms of this whole thing.
But will it be a slower recovery as a result? Do you think it will be a slower recovery as a result?
Slower economic recovery or public health recovery?
Right.
Which one?
Slower economic recovery.
The
V-shaped one I was talking about.
Again, I'm not going to forecast that. What I'm going to say is that we're doing our best to defend the American people and the nurses and health doctors at the front lines. We're doing our best move forward with the economy. And don't forget, Neil, we haven't even talked about this, the tremendous work that Congress and the White House have done in terms of stimulus package. So all of this is going
more
to come together.
And
I'm bullish on this economy.
All well said. All right. Thank you.
Peter Navarro was early on in trying to bring to the president's attention the problems of this pandemic. But also, he was advising the president to cut off flights from China into the United States. About the same time, he said that the president had made that decision. But anyway, he's a very smart person. He's someone to pay attention to and to listen to and certainly take his advice. Next up is Steve Bannon, and boy, he's been down on China for a while. Here's what he says about China, and it's not good.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is demanding an investigation into the origins of the coronavirus. We discussed this in an interview on Friday as the president this weekend questioned China's role in the pandemic for the very first time, wondering if it was actually an accident. Watch this.
The question was asked, would you be angry at China? Well, the answer might very well be a very resounding yes, but it depends. Was it a mistake that got out of control, or was it done deliberately? Okay, it's a big difference between those two. In either event, they should have let us go in. You know, we asked to go in very early, and they didn't want us in. I think they were embarrassed.
Former White House Chief Strategist Steve Bannon was among the first to raise a red flag on China's deception. He wrote an op-ed last May that the U.S. was already at war with the communist country, and he joins me right now to talk more about it. Steve, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Maria.
Steve, that was the first time the president actually publicly raised the question of, was it deliberate? I found that stunning. You haven't heard the president raise such an issue before. Your reaction?
One of the key phrases the president used, and I think if I was in Beijing, I'd be very nervous right now. He said, knowingly responsible. Knowingly responsible. And I think, let's set aside for a second, this is a biological Chernobyl. But let's set aside a second the lab and did it leak out of the lab with a technician on trying to find a vaccine. Let's leave aside the fact that were they doing gain-of-function experiments there against everybody's knowledge. Let's leave aside for a second whether they have an offensive biological weapons program. That's all going to be investigated, as Pompeo and Senator Cotton says. That's all now being investigated by intelligence services, by the World Health Organizations, etc. Let's go back to knowingly responsible. And let's be precise. This is not the Chinese people, and this is not China. The Chinese people, the decent, hardworking people of China, are the single biggest victims here. This is about the Chinese Communist Party. And they are knowingly responsible for what happened. This is an act of commission. They knew, as a matter of fact, no later than the last week of December of 2019, they knew they had human-to-human transmission and community spread. The Free Chinese and the Republic of Taiwan, the Republic of China and Taiwan, notified the World Health Organization on January 31st. One of my broadcasting partners, Miles Guo, broadcasted on the 31st about human-to-human transmission. Most importantly, the great martyr of this process in China, Dr. Li, and his colleagues in Wuhan, the doctors, were on WeChat telling everybody, get ready, we have human-to-human transmission. They're coming into the hospitals now. The Chinese Communist Party.
Let me show you this timeline. We have a timeline because it was December 10th, one of the earliest known coronavirus patients falling ill in Wuhan, China. And you're right, the doctor raises the alarm on the coronavirus on December 30th. What happens then, Steve? He gets arrested. He's dead now, as you know, from coronavirus.
But he's arrested. He's also tortured. His family is put under surveillance, and they force him to sign a document that says he's a rumor monger, that these are lies, that there's not human-to-human transmission. The Chinese Communist Party at the highest level, that is President Xi and Wang Qishan, knowingly understood they had human-to-human transmission. We also know now from Scott Gottlieb and also from a report by a Chinese doctor at Southampton University in the United Kingdom that if they had acted like any human being would act, decent human, if they had acted as late as the last week of December, 95% of all of this would not have happened. That is the crime here. That's the tragedy here. All the 40,000 Americans that will be dead by tomorrow morning, all the victims in Wuhan that could be tens or hundreds of thousands, all the dead in Lombardy, all the doctors and nurses, all the blood of all that is on the Chinese Communist Party's hands, on Xi and Wang Qishan and their other gangsters. Also, all the economic carnage. It's going to take us decades to work our way out of here eventually. All of that is squarely on the Chinese Communist Party, not the Chinese people. Remember, there were hundreds of thousands of innocent Chinese flying all over the world in the month of January. They didn't know that they had the virus. The Chinese Communist Party hid this. They hid it at the White House on the meetings on the 14th and when they signed. The World Health Organization put out a document on the 12th, and then they tweeted on the 14th. After consultation with senior Chinese medical officials, there's no human-to-human transmission while they're at the White House. Then they go to Davos. You're one of the first ones to actually report this. They don't tell anybody. And when they started to stop the traffic and the travel inside of China, they didn't stop it to the rest of the world. It took Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States, against his medical advisor's opinion because they were going off what the World Health Organization said. It was Trump that stopped the international travel on the 31st of January. The blood is on the hands of the Chinese Communist Party and the world for the Chinese people, the people of Wuhan and Hubei. The world must hold these people accountable.
Will the world hold them accountable? I mean, the lying is continuing as we speak. Yesterday at the president's task force press conference, they showed a graphic of the mortality rate, Steve. I mean, it's laughable to think that China is all the way at the bottom of this chart when you've got so many cases across the world and deaths. Look at where China is. I mean, are we supposed to believe that there are fewer deaths in China than anywhere in the world?
I think it was very powerful that President Trump actually interrupted Dr. Birx's presentation, which he never does when she's talking about numbers, to actually point out it's so egregious. We had on our show yesterday from China people that are saying the urns themselves, they cremated their urns, and there's 40 or 50,000 urns. They people in Wuhan think that there are probably over 100,000 people in Wuhan that died, and forget the rest of China. We don't know because they lie about everything. But you ask about how they're going to be held accountable. The righteous indignation of the peoples of the world are going to stand up and make sure that they're held accountable. President Trump laid it out.
Yeah.
Knowingly responsible. They are knowingly responsible for the acts of commission, that all of this could have been avoided. Remember, 60 days ago, we had the greatest economy in American history. The whole world was prosperous. We were looking for a great 2020, a great kickoff to a decade. Now we're looking at economic carnage and the largest mass casualty event in American history caused by a biological Chernobyl and the lies, misrepresentations, and the cover up. Cotton, who couldn't be on here today, calls it the biggest cover up in world history. It's incumbent upon the intelligence services, it's incumbent upon the nations of the earth to come together.
Well, the question that I'm asking is, isn't it wild that no one got infected in Beijing? Wow. What a novel thought. I mean, Wuhan, 5 million people start traveling. Some people went to Italy. Some people went to the United States. By the way, 433,000 people traveled from China to the United States after it was known that the coronavirus was happening. But nobody got infected in Beijing. I've got to move on to the election. How is this going to impact the election? Do you think Joe Biden is going to be the Democrat candidate given his experience with China?
Well, first off, he's by far the weakest candidate. He's totally compromised. Remember, President Obama basically had Biden as his wingman to do everything with China. He's compromised by the Chinese Communist Party. He is personally compromised by the Chinese Communist Party. And that'll all be laid out in details. His family's in business with him. But he has made every bad decision in this managed decline of the United States. It was Joe Biden. Remember, Joe Biden was saying last summer, hey, China's not no problem. China's not a problem. It was Joe Biden that took the side of the Chinese Communist Party. He was a useful idiot for the Chinese. When President Trump stands up and says, hey, we got to stop the traffic coming in here, and we have to quarantine the people that come in, it was Biden that took the Beijing party line. It was Biden that went right to, it's xenophobic, it's native, it's racist.
Is he the candidate, or are the Democrats making too many gaffes?
The Democratic Party has no chance of beating Donald J. Trump with Joe Biden. It's not going to happen. Joe Biden is totally compromised by the Chinese Communist Party and by his actions. And by his actions, by the way, I'm not even saying about his health and how fuzzy, you know, how unfocused he looks when he comes on his Proof of Life podcast that he puts out every 3 weeks. Mm. Ronna McDaniel at the RNC says something
the candidate or not? Steve, are they going to replace him as a candidate, you think?
I think at the convention they're going to look very seriously at replacing Biden and have somebody that could really take on Trump. Biden cannot take on Donald J. Trump. No way. Not on China and not on any other topic.
Steve, it's great to see you this morning. Thank you, Steve Bannon.
Up next is Alex Jones and what he says. Some of those kits that the Chinese were shipping us were tainted with the virus. We first picked this up about 3 weeks ago out of a shipment coming in from the Netherlands to the UK. And so Alex is furthering that even more. So here we go with his report.
Well, there's the Ars Technica story. This is in Bloomberg as well. CDC's failed coronavirus tests were tainted with coronavirus, feds confirm. Remember Fauci saying, oh, don't worry, don't shut anything, and he was flying thousands back? And Trump was like, you shouldn't be flying people in from China. Let's block that. Let's block Americans till they're quarantined. And Fauci said, oh, no, Mr. President, in February, mid-February, sir, it's fine. And we're like, they're bringing it here to incubate it. Because Fauci's involved with Bill Gates, and it happened. Think about that. Fauci is a master villain, like out of a James Bond movie. And we knew this back then, but now it's confirmed. The CDC goes, yeah. Twofold. We had false positives because the test had all been marked with the coronavirus. And they believe the test gave people coronavirus. Well, this news really deserves some fanfare. It's very sad news, but exposing this could bring down the globalists. You know, I kind of feel like that 20th Century Fox still is a quintessential fanfare, but aren't air raid sirens, enemy bombers coming in to drop bombs on you? Isn't that really what matters? But see, in the 21st century, you don't send in bombers to bomb people. You send in testing kits. And, oh, it's an accident China has. They just so happen to have the testing kits right in the same room with the virus. And they just so happened to accidentally put it on the needles that went in your arms and give it to you. And they also wiped their shoes with the mask and shipped them over. And the governor of California, the governor of New York, ordered you to wear the used mask. Because we're not in rundown Chinese cities where they have open sewers and all the rest of it, where the government doesn't care about the people when the people have given up. So there's the Ars Technica story. This is in Bloomberg as well. CDC's failed coronavirus tests were tainted with coronavirus, feds confirm. Remember Fauci saying, oh, don't worry, don't shut anything, and he was flying thousands back? And Trump was like, you shouldn't be flying people in from China. Let's block that. Let's block Americans till they're quarantined. Fauci, oh, no, Mr. President, in February, mid-February, sir, it's fine. We're like, they're bringing it here to incubate it. It's Fauci's involved with Bill Gates. And it happened. Think about that. Fauci is a master villain, like out of a James Bond movie. And we knew this back then, but now it's confirmed. The CDC goes, yeah. Twofold. We had false positives because the test had all been marked with the coronavirus. And they believe the test gave people coronavirus. Imagine if Trump shipped over some tests and they were infected to China. It'd be off of his head. But, oh, Fauci. Let's put Fauci back on screen. He's so smart. He wanted all the Chinese here, said fly them here. He wanted to fly Americans in untested. They released people that had COVID-19 on the streets of Texas, California, New York, Florida, Michigan. And then the lady that created the test at the Wuhan lab, she runs all of Facebook censorship over the science division. They're the fact checkers that when Trump says it came out of Wuhan, well, she says it's not true. Because she knows she worked at Wuhan. Of course, she never tells you she worked there or that she has that conflict. And these people have nothing but disdain for you. They think you're totally stupid and you don't know what's going on. No, it's a real virus that they own that spreads really fast so everyone can be infected with it. Even though it's not very deadly, unless you're 89 years old and, you know, had 14 heart surgeries or hanging on to life by your toenails. But again, you want it novel. It's his. It's Gates's. You can't, again, patent something that's natural. You've got to patent like a drug. Can't patent vitamin C. Can't patent fish oil. Can't patent vitamin D3. You need to have an artificiality. So it's a new little dropping, little egg that Bill Gates put out for you, and little Fauci all quacking around and saving us, and their little sick cult. And they're totally freaking out because 30-40% of the public hates their ass now and knows. And so they're just trying to, I mean, you look at Gates, he's really freaked out because he may have a bunch of people submitting to him, but he knows if 1% know he's doing this, he's done. It's more like 30%, 40%, Jack. So what's he going to pull? They'll probably release any more deadly bioweapons soon. I mean, we're in bad shape, folks. They've made their move. They dropped the hammer. And that man heads up the most satanic power force on Earth. So he's coming with a needle for you and your family. What are you going to do? All right. Here he comes. He says he wants to kill you publicly. And he wants to put something in your body because he loves you. See, the meta, they go, why does he say he wants to depopulate us, but then he says he wants to save us? They have to metaphysically put the notice somewhere. It's a legal thing. He has to put the notice there. And then once the notice is there, then he can do whatever he wants. So we have free will. But God goes, you know, my children just don't have free will. You got to warn them. You got to tell them. Because, you know, Satan goes up and has audiences with God and says, I want to do this and that. And I'm like, nope, not doing it. You have to trick them to do all these bad things and denounce me. They have to beg for you to destroy them first. Satan goes, okay, I'll treat them to hate themselves, train them to hate America, train them to hate their children. And God's like, okay, well, then you can do it. Because Bill Gates thinks he's midwifing the end of humanity. He's midwifing the end of his existence.
China cannot be trusted. They're ruthless. The Chinese Communist government doesn't care about its people. The people of China are some really fine people, and they need to break out, to break the hold that the Chinese Communist government has over them. But anyway, we're going to move on to a clip here. Roger Stone is talking about his own problems now that he can speak freely after he's been convicted. They muzzled him before, put a gag order on him. The judge did. Very highly unfair. But here's what he says about his own predicament. And also he brings General Flynn in there. And then I'll discuss and elaborate a little bit on what General Flynn has been up against and his solution. It's to request through additional proof, exculpatory proof, a immediate dismissal of his case. But here we go with Roger Stone.
Great to have you with us. We are incredibly honored today to have with us Mr. Roger Stone again. He's a man who obviously needs no introduction. Incredibly interesting person who's been involved in the politics of the United States for many decades. Been an advisor to Donald Trump going back to the 1980s. Roger, thank you so much for being with us again.
Alex, it's great to see you again, and it's particularly great to have my First Amendment rights back and have the ability to discuss not only my case, but the American political scene. It just seems un-American that a federal judge can, with a snap of a finger, deprive you of your free speech rights, deprive you of the right to defend yourself, while the fake news media, the corporately owned media, MSNBC, CNN, The New York Times, The Washington Post, are fabricating lie after lie after lie about you and the president and the situation in America, and you are prohibited from responding. So I'm really grateful to have this opportunity.
Hey, well, we're grateful to have you. Thank you so much, Roger. So let's get right into it. I know you're supposed to be heading off to prison here very soon. You know, a lot of people are looking at this case, and it really looks fishy. You know, you have high-ranking Democrats that, you know, everybody knows have been committing very serious crimes, and they're running around like nothing. Has there been a double standard? Is there an injustice being perpetrated here against you, Roger? And also some of the other people involved with President Trump, you know, General Mike Flynn comes to mind, also Paul Manafort, you know, what's going on here? Do you think this is an injustice, and is this a deliberate effort to target people who have been close to Donald Trump or who've helped Donald Trump in some way?
I think most Americans understand that I was a political target. For well over a year, you could read and hear on television that I would be charged with treason, espionage, colluding with the Russians, cyber crimes, the receipt of stolen emails, and so on. None of that was true. There was no evidence to that effect. So ultimately, Andrew Weissman, an epically corrupt federal prosecutor, poked up a really contrived indictment that claimed that I lied to Congress specifically about the Trump campaign's interest in the WikiLeaks disclosures. Not that I had them and gave them to anybody, not that I had advanced knowledge of the source or content, but simply that I hid the campaign's interest in them, which is absurd because President Trump, then candidate Trump, openly discussed the WikiLeaks disclosures on 142 occasions in September and October. That statistic comes from MSNBC, by the way. So I had no crime to lie about. There is no underlying illegal activity for which I would have the motive to lie. It was a railroading. It was a Soviet-style show trial in which I had a stacked jury, not a single Republican, not a conservative, a single conservative, not a single member of the John Birch Society, not a single military veteran, not a single person with an education level below college, but a majority of the jurors having a post-college degree, at least three attorneys on the jury, multiple jurors having served in previous Democratic administrations. This was a classic railroading, and I had a hostile judge who attacked me multiple times from the bench, which I think is prejudicial prior to finding a verdict. So it was a Kafka-esque experience. In other words, I thought I would be able to defend myself, but the judge systematically prohibited the strongest possible lines of defense. So when I tried to argue selective prosecution that Comey, Brennan, Clapper, and later McCabe, Strzok, Hillary herself, and others had lied under oath, I was disallowed. I couldn't argue that. I was prohibited from arguing that. The first four pages of my indictment allege that the Russians hacked the DNC and gave the information to WikiLeaks, implying that WikiLeaks gave it to me and that I gave it to Donald Trump. Completely false. I was not allowed to challenge that. I could have proved with forensic evidence and experts with NSA credentials that that actually never happened. The government has no evidence that that happens. It's interesting because once the government admitted in discovery that they relied entirely on the CrowdStrike report, the report of a Democratic-based IT firm that was retained by the DNC, and that the FBI had never examined the Democratic National Committee servers, and that got some legs in the press, Jonathan Kravis, the assistant U.S. attorney, filed a surreply with the court saying, "We do have additional information, Your Honor. Stone is incorrect, but we cannot make it public because it's classified under national security." In other words, Mr. Kravis defrauded the court. By the way, he just got a big appointment in Washington tomorrow. Wait until he sees the Rule 6 violations filings coming against him. There is no evidence. Put it on the table. So, but I was not allowed to argue any of that. It was really never a fair fight from the beginning. I had no qualms about pleading not guilty because I had not done anything wrong. And the implication that I had discussed the WikiLeaks disclosures with candidate Trump, according to Rick Gates, a convicted liar for which the government produced no corroboration, no phone records, no witnesses, no eyewitnesses, even though supposedly, according to Gates, there were two Secret Service agents present at the time this happened, is a lie. By the way, he was let out of jail yesterday by the same judge.
Wow. So was this the swamp? Was this the deep state, Roger, coming after you? And have they gone also after Flynn and others? And you know, what do you think it's going to take to bring this all under control?
Well, there's no question that I was a political target for several reasons. First of all, because I wrote the book, The Clinton's War on Women, which is the definitive expose of Bill and Hillary Clinton and their treason and their corruption and their immorality. And therefore, I think that made me a target. The chief prosecutor in my case was Jeannie Rae, a woman who was Hillary Clinton's lawyer and who represented the Clinton Foundation prior to her service on the Mueller investigation. No prosecutorial experience. Then the case was turned over to one of the most corrupt individuals I have ever come across, Aaron Zelinsky, former counsel to the State Department under Hillary Clinton. The mainstream media insists on describing him as a career prosecutor. He is a political appointee, and he's an arrogant bully, who also, I believe, violated the law in my prosecution. General Flynn, in my mind, is one of the great American patriots, and he is being punished because during the Clinton and Obama administration, he refused to stop saying that radical Islam is a real danger to America. He was targeted from the very beginning. General Flynn did not break the law. FBI agents who interviewed him said he did not break the law. His prosecution is, if anything, even worse than mine. It is a disgrace that this man, who gave 30 years of his life to serving his country, is being persecuted like this. So in many ways, I feel a kinship with him. I obviously am praying that the president will provide executive relief to both General Flynn and myself, because that is the court of last resort. General Flynn at least has a special prosecutor now appointed to review his case. In my case, the judge issued an order last Thursday that ordered me to court within 2 weeks. That would be next Thursday. By the way, in case you hadn't noticed, we have a coronavirus epidemic going on, and nonviolent criminals are being released from prison, but not in my case.
So there you have it. Roger Stone has been unjustly, unfairly prosecuted, and the foreman of the jury that they finally ended up seating was highly biased against Trump and Roger Stone, and the judge dismisses that with some little quote, you know, from something, you know, so, totally unfair, unjust. And General Flynn also was prosecuted unfairly also, and they intimidated him along the way. The Federalist has this to say yesterday about General Flynn, Michael Flynn. New court documents filed under seal include significant exculpatory information about Michael Flynn, President Donald Trump's former national security advisor, an FBI official familiar with the situation, told the Federalist on Friday. The new documents, which were filed under seal by the Department of Justice Friday, allegedly include exonerating evidence about Flynn, who pleaded guilty to lying to federal investigators about his conversation with foreign diplomats as Trump's top incoming foreign policy advisor, and is currently attempting to withdraw his plea, as well as evidence of malfeasance by the FBI during the administration. During the investigation, I should say. So this is really an example of what's happened to this country, is that there've been gangs out there, you know, criminal gangs. They've reached really high positions in power, and actually they're plundering our treasury in one way or another, whether it's defense contracts or it's contributions or it's aid to this and aid to that country. You know what I mean? John Lewis wrote a book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that Charlotte and I interviewed way back. And we might just play that tonight during our second hour. Might be a good one to include. But he had to say that all of this foreign aid to these countries to build infrastructure projects, the leadership just, you know, stole out of those cash flows. But also people here in our governments on whatever level. That's what's happened. Is the level of corruption is on so many levels now, from the top to the bottom, that everybody's got their hands out stealing and plundering our treasury, and we're paying for it through our taxes. So, one example here of a tyrant now is Maduro down in Venezuela. He's just slapped price controls on food and so forth. And this is a report by Al Jazeera about people in the streets, and there are riots happening all across Venezuela as we speak. So listen to this special report by Al Jazeera.
Daisy Morales sells food on the streets of Catia, a working-class neighborhood in Caracas. The ongoing economic crisis and the lockdown are having a big impact in her life.
We are only working 3 hours a day. I understand they are doing it to protect our health, but I'm a single mother of two children, and my eldest daughter and her son also live at home. I think the situation will get worse every day.
Security forces on the streets are trying to enforce a lockdown to prevent the spread of COVID-19. but people are becoming more and more desperate every day. On Thursday, reports of looting and clashes with security forces in several states around the country show how dire the situation is. COVID-19 may generate fear among people, but surviving every day is the main worry for many. Government figures show that Venezuela has around 300 confirmed cases of COVID-19. President Nicolas Maduro says the country has tested over 200,000 people with the help of the Chinese government.
That is the medium-term goal. We have to reach 1 million tests. At this stage, we've carried out 250,000, but we have to reach 10 million tests to comply with the complete protocol of the World Health Organization.
There are two types of testing being done, the PCR, that tests the virus genetic material, and the rapid tests, that are less sensitive than the PCR. That's why doctors like Julio Castro say the virus may be severely underdiagnosed in Venezuela.
Limitation of the amount of tests prevents you from doing lots of them, but it may be greatly underreported. What we think the government is doing is mixing PCR tests and rapid tests. You cannot mix pears with apples. The numbers reflect different things.
Venezuelan hospitals are already struggling with shortages of almost everything. Only 70% of them have running water and soap. We spoke to Oscar Navas, a doctor in the state of Anzoátegui. He says he supports the call by opposition leader Juan Guaidó to pay extra money to healthcare workers that fight COVID-19.
A doctor like me gets $1.50 a month, and that's why my interim president, Juan Guaidó, will use some resources to give $100 a month to those who qualify and work in the health sector. The money comes from accounts that have been recovered from the government and will be paid as virtual money for 3 months.
Venezuela's healthcare system is already stressed to the limit. The spread of COVID-19 can easily make it collapse. Teresa Bo, Al Jazeera.
Now let's come back to American politics. Karen Whitsitt is a state legislator in Michigan, and she was cured with this hydroxychloroquine. And here's her testimony on Tucker Carlson. And then I'm going to end with Dr. Siegel and his inside information.
Karen Whitsitt is a Democratic lawmaker in the state of Michigan. She believes she was suffering from coronavirus and steadily getting worse until she received hydroxychloroquine from her physician. Then she recovered. Whitsitt came on this show to explain what happened, and as she explained it, she gave some credit to a president she didn't vote for.
Dr. Arsawala did save my life, and I do credit, you know, the president to doing so and putting this out there, because it wasn't accessible to me if it was for that fact.
Yes.
I had very little time to be able to get to this and be able to make a choice, because my breathing did become very labored.
So you just saw a woman who, at bare minimum, went through a harrowing experience and escaped with her life. We should celebrate, but not everybody is. A Detroit branch of the Democratic Party says it plans to censure Whitsitt and expel her from the Democratic Party for daring to meet with the president after she got well. They didn't congratulate her for surviving. They punished her for violating party orthodoxy. Representative Whitsitt joins us tonight again, along with her physician, Mohammed Arsawala. Welcome to you both, Representative. Doctor, Representative, to you first. It's hard to believe this is true. Why would the Democratic Party expel you?
Well, thank you for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Why they would expel me is, why they would expel me is beyond words for me. This is something that I did not expect. I started out with a simple thank you to the man that is the president of the United States. It's a thank you. I didn't know that thank you had a political line. I didn't know thank you belonged to one political party over another, and that if you were in one party, you could not say thank you to another person. I had no idea.
Do you think the fact that you credited not simply the president, but this medicine, hydroxychloroquine, offended them more?
Oh, I think it all correlated all together. I think it was just me as a state representative that I was out of line, according to possibly our governor, taking myself and going to the White House to speak with the president of the United States. I think it was a kind of how dare you, because the person who is in charge of the 13th congressional district actually works for our governor.
We followed your governor fairly closely recently, and I just want to apologize. So let me just ask, did the governor call you and say, "I'm so glad you didn't die. Welcome back to the living. Congratulations."
Actually, it was not as pleasant as that, and the text messages that we have had since then have not been as pleasant as well. I'm not going to stand by and be quiet, nor will I be silenced by anyone when it comes to the people in my community. I don't care who it is. You know, if you're not doing right by us, if you're not doing right by Black people within our community, I'm going to stand up, and I don't care who it is. I'm going to stand up against you. I'm going to speak out. And right now, I'm speaking for the people who can't speak for themselves. That is my job. That is my responsibility. That is my duty. That's what I'm sworn to do. And I don't care who it is. I will go up against her any day. So the fact that she cannot work for the president of the United States. Well, I hope she is too, because, you know, the fact that she cannot work with the president of the United States, you know, Donald Trump, the president wants to work with us. He wants to give us the things that we need. And I've had the conversations with him. So I know firsthand. I've had the conversations with the Vice President Pence as well. So I know firsthand. Yeah. I've had the experience. So I know. Yeah. I know the shock and awe on their face when they heard that we were not getting the things that we needed and deserved in the city of Detroit. So only thing I can say
Go ahead.
Only thing I can do is just throw my hands up. You know, the fact that this would come down from the 13th Congressional District, yeah. Jonathan Kinloch, you know, who runs the 13th Congressional, would actually do this to me is unbelievable. You know, for someone as myself who is simply trying to stand up for the voiceless, it's unbelievable. But I would expect it because
it is unbelievable.
Work for the governor.
It is unbelievable. I just want to get your physician in here really quickly. Doctor, do you still credit hydroxychloroquine for helping to save your patient? Representative Whitson.
Yes. Tucker, it's good to be on your show again. You know, absolutely. Since I've treated Karen, I've also treated a few other patients. As I said again, there are cardiac toxicity associated with that. But right now, if you look at it, the science is behind this medicine, because right now, if in an inpatient setting, as long as you can monitor the heart, the people are using it. The outpatient use, even the FDA has recommended that you can use it only based on the physician and patient interaction. That means in my case, whenever I've used it, I've used it on 16 other patients, and it has worked, because we don't have any real medicine to treat the COVID virus infection. Right now, there is a huge study going on in Michigan. Even on healthy individuals, they are trying to do a study to see if you take hydroxychloroquine, and can it prevent this disease. So let's not fight politics aside. I think the most important thing is we have to bring science into our life. We have to bring science. We have to do everything in our toolbox to help each other out. I think the most important thing that we have to do is we have to understand that this virus is new. It's taking lives. It's devastated our economy, and we have to do something to come together to do the best care possible, Tucker. This is absolutely very important.
Doctor, thank you. Representative, thank you. You should know that on MSNBC right now, they're effectively scolding you for using this drug.
Next comes another interview that Tucker Carlson had almost, it's on the 7th of April, with Dr. Mark Siegel, who does a lot of consulting for Fox News Network. And here's what Dr. Siegel had to say about the effects and how effective that this hydroxychloroquine is. But here we go with Dr. Siegel.
Tucker, I want to tell you about a 96-year-old man in Florida who said one night, "I don't think I'm going to make it. I feel very weak. The end is coming. I'm coughing. I'm short of breath. I can't get up from the couch." The next day, he was on hydroxychloroquine and antibiotics per his cardiologist. He got up the next day. He was fine. This man is my father. Tucker?
Wow. That couldn't be a clearer and heavier example. Dr. Siegel, thank you for that tonight.
Next coming up is a report. Lou Dobbs has Devin Nunes on there. They're talking about some of the latest information about all this spies and corruption and the Steele document and so forth. So here we go now.
The Senate Intelligence Committee has released a report today supporting the intelligence community's conclusion that the Russian government was trying to help then-candidate Donald Trump in the 2016 election. That committee, going against all other known evidence, saying the 2017 intelligence community assessment of Russian interference, quote, reflects proper analytic tradecraft. Now, the Senate Intelligence Committee, it appears, is an arbiter of whether or not our spy agencies know what they're talking about when indulging in tradecraft. This committee also found the fraudulent Steele dossier was only included in a highly classified appendix and did not inform any of the judgments of the intelligence community. Again, despite nearly all of the known evidence. Recently released documents from the Department of Justice, however, clearly show that the Clinton campaign bought and paid for the dossier full of Russian disinformation that was peddled to the United States. The Senate Intel's conclusions were made by a committee. Its former security director, by the way, James Wolf, leaked the first two Carter Page FISA warrants to the media. Chairman Senator Richard Burr, who spent 3 years now harassing the president, even subpoenaed his son Donald Trump Jr. last year. The vice chairman, Mark Warner, tried to contact Christopher Steele in 2017, texting a lobbyist for a Russian oligarch, asking him for access to Steele. Despite their latest report, that Senate committee still hasn't addressed the question whether anyone on the Trump team colluded with the Russians, which, of course, was the essential question they didn't want to answer because it didn't happen. Well, joining us tonight, the Senate's report contradicting one put out by the House in 2018, which concluded, quote, the intelligence community assessment judgments on Putin's strategic intentions did not employ proper analytic tradecraft. The exact opposite. So how did they come up with such a different opinion? Joining us tonight, Congressman Devin Nunes, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, member of the House Ways and Means Committee. And Congressman, great to have you with us. Let's start with two committees, intelligence committees, and coming up with diametrically opposed conclusions. Your reaction?
Well, I would say that, we have our report. I don't know how they did their report. You have to remember the Democrats in the House of Representatives also opposed our report. So, what do we agree on? We agree that 98% of that intelligence community assessment was fine. But the key is the fact that they used the dossier, which should have never been done, because now you go back and look of what the FBI and the intelligence agencies had in their possession, the Department of Justice. That's why I call this report now, only halfway joking, I named it after the famous Clinton Fusion GPS Steele dossier. I call this Obama's dossier because it was written right when Obama was leaving office. And that's to me, that is a problem. So we went back there. It was put together in like 3 weeks. So just that alone, I think, is suspect. What we found, Lou, is that the tradecraft was not up to snuff. And now the problem with Obama's dossier, with that intelligence community assessment, is it's either lies or omissions or both. So if the intelligence agencies had a plethora of information and didn't put it into an intelligence community assessment, how can it even be a true intelligence community assessment? So sometimes you just have to apply a little common sense to this. I don't know what happened in the Senate. You'll have to ask them. But we stand by our not only do we stand by what we found, but I would add this too, that one of our criminal referrals involves intelligence community assessment, in that, whether or not intelligence was manipulated for political purposes. And, we've sent that to the Department of Justice now, a year ago.
Thank you for listening tonight. That's the end of our program. We couldn't put our little ending song in there, but God bless each and every one of you out there. We want to thank you for your support over the years. We're just trying to get down to the truth. Well, this is the secret truth. But sometimes it's hidden. It's hidden in deep, deep lies, distortions, and the bending of real truth. Thank you for listening.